Recorded Books presents an unabridged recording of The Sisters Grimm, Book 2, The Unusual Suspects, by Michael Buckley.
Sabrina scrambled through the darkness, armed with a shovel and using the cold stone walls as a guide. Each step was a challenge to her balance and senses. She stumbled over jagged rocks and accidentally kicked over an abandoned tool, sending a clanging echo off the tunnel walls. Whatever was waiting for her in the labyrinth knew she was coming now. Unfortunately, she couldn't turn back. Her family was somewhere in the twisting maze, and no one else could help them. Sabrina prayed they were all still alive. The tunnel made a sharp turn, and around the corner Sabrina spotted a distant, flickering light. She quickened her pace, and soon the tunnel opened into an enormous cave, carved out of the bedrock of Ferryport Landing. Torches mounted on the cave walls gave the room a dull light, not strong enough to dissolve the black shadows in every corner. Sabrina scanned the cave. A few old buckets and a couple of shovels leaned against a crumbling wall. She started to retrace her steps when something hit her squarely in the back. She fell hard on her shoulder, dropping her shovel. Searing pain swam through her veins, followed by a throbbing ache. She could still move her fingers, but Sabrina knew her arm was broken. She screamed, but her cries were drowned out by an odd clicking and hissing sound. As she crawled to her feet, Sabrina grabbed the shovel and swung it around threateningly, searching the room for her attacker. "I've come for my family!" she shouted into the darkness. Her voice bounced back at her from all sides of the rocky room. Again she heard clicking and hissing, followed by a cold, arrogant chuckle. A long, spindly leg struck out from the shadows, narrowly missing Sabrina's head. It slammed against the wall behind the girl, pulverizing stone into dust. Sabrina lifted the heavy shovel and swung wildly at the leg, sinking the sharp edge deep into the monster's flesh. Shrieks of agony echoed through the cavern. "I'm not going to be easy to kill," Sabrina said, hoping her voice sounded more confident to the monster than it did to her own ears. "Kill you? This is a party," a voice replied. "And you're the guest of honor." Chapter 1. 3 days earlier. "Let's get this party started already," Sabrina complained under her breath as she rubbed the Charlie horse in her leg. She and her 7-year-old sister Daphne had been crouching behind a stack of diaper rash Donna dolls for nearly 3 hours. She was tired, hungry, and more than a little irritated. For a week, they had been on this stakeout, and it was beginning to look as if they had wasted another perfectly good night of sleep. Even Elvis, their 200-pound Great Dane, had given up and was snoring on the floor next to them. Of course, how Sabrina wanted to spend her time wasn't really considered, she had learned, especially if there was a mystery afoot. Their grandmother loved a good mystery, so when Geppetto complained that his toy store had been robbed every night for 2 weeks, Granny Relda volunteered herself and the Sisters Grimm to help the police catch the crooks. Sabrina wondered what an old woman, 2 kids, and a sleepy dog could do that the expensive security cameras and motion detectors the old man had installed couldn't. But once Granny sunk her teeth into something, she wouldn't let go. In most towns, the police do not rely on an old woman, 2 kids, and a sleepy dog to solve crimes. But Ferryport Landing was no ordinary town. More than half of its residents were part of a secret community known as the Everafters. Everafters were actually fairy tale characters who had fled Europe to escape persecution. Settling in the little river town almost 200 years ago, they now used magical disguises to live and work alongside their normal neighbors. Ogres worked at the post office, witches ran the 24-hour diner, and the town mayor was the legendary Prince Charming. The humans were none the wiser, except the Grimms. As fantastic and thrilling as it sounded to live among fairy tale characters, it wasn't a dream come true for Sabrina Grimm. Being the last in a long line of Grimms, descended from the famous Brothers Grimm, she and her sister had had the family responsibility of keeping the peace between ever-afters and humans thrust upon them no less than 3 weeks ago. And it wasn't an easy job. Most ever-afters saw the Grimms as the bane of their existence. A two-century-old magical curse had trapped the ever-afters in Fairyport Landing for all eternity, and the girl's great-great-great-great-grandfather, Wilhelm, was responsible. Trying to prevent a war between ever-afters and humans, Wilhelm had aligned himself with a powerful witch named Baba Yaga, and together they had cast the spell over the town. The ever-afters' freedom could only be returned to them when the last Grimm had passed away, and so far, the Grimms were alive and kicking. Yet, even with that kind of baggage, Granny Relda had made a few genuine friends in the community. Sheriff Hampstead was one of those friends. The rotund policeman with the southern charm was actually one of the three not-so-little pigs. Lately, he had turned to the family for help with Fairyport Landing's unsolved cases. And here the Grimms were, leg cramps and all, waiting for someone or something to make its move. After 5 long nights, Sabrina's patience had worn thin. There were things she should have been doing, important things that didn't involve hiding behind Etch-a-Sketches and cans of silly string stacked miles high for the Christmas season. Sabrina reached into her pocket and pulled out a small flashlight. She flicked its switch, and a tiny, focused beam illuminated a book sitting at her feet. She picked it up and started reading. She didn't get far.
"Sabrina," Daphne whispered, "what are you doing? You're going to give us away. Turn off that light."
Sabrina grumbled, slammed the book closed, and set it aside. If the Jungle Book held any clue to rescuing their parents, it would have to wait. Sabrina's little sister had taken to detective work the way a dog does to a slice of bologna. Like their grandmother, Daphne loved every minute of it. The stakeouts, the long hours. She was a natural and took her new job quite seriously. Suddenly, there was a rustling sound across the room. Sabrina quickly shut off her flashlight and peered over the stack of dolls. Something was moving near a display for a hot holiday toy. "Don't tickle the tiger." Daphne poked her head up and looked around, too.
"Do you see anything?"
the little girl whispered.
"No, but it's coming from that direction," Sabrina whispered back. "Wake up Sleepy and see if he smells anything."
Daphne shook Elvis until he staggered to his feet. The big dog had recently had bandages removed after a run-in with a bad guy's boot and was still a bit sluggish. He looked around as if he didn't remember where he was.
"You smell any bad guys, Elvis?"
Daphne asked. The dog sniffed the air. His ears rose and his eyes grew wide. He let out a soft whine to let the girls know he had smelled something.
"Go get him, boy!"
Daphne cried, and the big dog took off like a rocket. Unfortunately, that was when Sabrina realized that Elvis's leash had wrapped itself around her foot. As the dog howled wildly and tore through the store, the girl was dragged behind him, knocking over stacks of board games and sending balls bouncing in all directions. They emptied boxes of puzzle pieces and sent an army of slinkies slinking across the floor. Sabrina struggled to grab the leash, but every time she got close to freeing herself, the dog took a wild turn and sent her skidding.
"Turn on the lights!"
Daphne shouted.
"Hey, let me go!"
a voice cried out.
"What's the big idea?"
another one shouted. Elvis circled back around, and Sabrina slid into a pile of what felt like sticky leaves. Some clung to her arms and legs, and one glued itself to her forehead. When the lights finally came on, Elvis stopped, stood over Sabrina, and barked. The girl sat up and then looked down at herself. There she was, in the center of Geppetto's toy store, covered in sticky glue mousetraps, each of which had a tiny little man, no more than a couple of inches high, stuck quick in the glue.
"Lilliputians," Sabrina said.
"I knew it," Granny Relda said, appearing from around a stack of action figures.
The old woman, dressed in a bright blue dress and a matching hat with a sunflower appliqué sewn into it, had the nerve to laugh. When Sabrina scowled at her, she tried to stop, but couldn't.
"Oh, Liebling,"
she giggled in her German accent. Daphne rushed over and tried to pull one of the traps off of Sabrina's shirt, but found it was stuck tight to her sister, as were a dozen or so Lilliputians.
"Who is the sick psychopath that came up with this idea?"
one of the Lilliputians shouted indignantly. Granny leaned down to him and smiled.
"Don't worry, a little vegetable oil, and we'll have you free in no time."
"But I'm afraid you're under arrest,"
Sheriff Hampstead said, as he stepped out from behind a stack of footballs. His puffy pink face beamed proudly as he tugged his trousers up over his massive belly. The sheriff was always fighting his sinking slacks. The Lilliputians groaned and complained as the sheriff went to work, yanking the sticky traps off Sabrina's clothes.
"You have the right to remain silent," Hampstead said. "Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law."
"Ouch," said Sabrina, as the sheriff tugged the glue trap from her forehead.
"I'm not talking, copper," one of the Lilliputians snapped. "I'll let my lawyer do the talking when we sue you for police brutality." "Police brutality," Sheriff Hampstead exclaimed.
Unfortunately, when the portly policeman got angry or excited, the magical disguise he used to hide who he really was stopped working. Now his nose vanished and was replaced by a runny pink snout. Two hairy pig ears popped out of the top of his head, and a series of snorts, squeals, and huffs came out of his mouth. Hampstead had nearly completed the change when the security guard from the next store over wandered in.
"What's going on in here?" the guard said with a tough, authoritative voice.
He was a tall, husky man with a military-style haircut. He puffed up his chest and pulled a billy club from a loop on his belt. He eyed the crowd as if he were fully prepared to deal with a gang of crooks. But when he saw the pig in a police uniform hovering over a dozen tiny men in glue traps, his confidence disappeared and his club fell to the floor.
"We forgot some of the shops have their own security guards,"
Granny Relda said softly as she reached into her handbag and approached the stunned man. She blew some soft pink dust into his face and his eyes glazed over. She told him he'd had another usual night at work and nothing out of the ordinary had occurred. The security guard nodded in agreement.
"Another night at work," he mumbled, falling under the forgetful dust's magic.
Sabrina scowled. She hated when magic was used to fix problems, especially when the problem involved humans.
"The glue traps were a brilliant idea," Sheriff Hampstead said as he drove the family home in his squad car.
Granny sat in the front, enjoying his praise, while Sabrina and Daphne were in the back, jockeying with Elvis for seat space. Hampstead had locked the Lilliputians in the glove compartment, and whenever their complaining got too loud, he would smack the top of the dashboard with his puffy hand and yell,
"Pipe down!"
"I'm just glad we could be of some help," Granny Relda replied. "Geppetto is such a nice old man. It broke my heart to hear he was being robbed, and with Christmas only 2 weeks away."
"I know the holidays are hard on him. He misses his boy," Hampstead said. "It's hard to believe that in 200 years, no one has heard a peep from Pinocchio."
"Wilhelm's journals claim he refused to get on the boat," Granny replied. "I suppose if I had been swallowed by a shark, I wouldn't be too eager to go back to sea either."
"I thought it was a whale," Daphne said.
"No, hon, only in the movie," Granny replied. "It's just a shame he didn't tell his father. By the time Geppetto discovered he wasn't on board, they were too far out to turn back."
"Well, I really do appreciate your help with this," the sheriff said. "The mayor's been cutting budgets left and right these days, and I just didn't have the manpower or money to catch the little thieves myself."
"Or make sure that the security guard was off duty so we didn't have to mess with his brain," Sabrina grumbled.
"Sheriff, The Grimms are always at your disposal, Granny Relda said, ignoring Sabrina.
I appreciate that, Relda, and I wish I could give you the credit for the arrest. But if Mayor Charming found out we'd been working together, my backside would be one of those footballs in Geppetto's store, Hampstead said.
It's our little secret, Granny Relda said with a wink.
How is Canis?
Granny shifted uncomfortably in her seat. Both Sabrina and Daphne watched her closely, wondering what their grandmother would say.
He's doing just fine, the old woman replied, forcing a smile.
Sabrina couldn't believe what she had just heard. In the short time they had known the old woman, Granny Relda had never told a lie. Mr. Canis was not fine by a long shot. 3 weeks earlier, Granny's constant companion and house guest, Mr. Canis, had transformed into the savage creature known as the Big Bad Wolf. Since then, no one had seen him. He had locked himself inside his bedroom while he fought to put back his real-life inner demon. Every night, Sabrina and Daphne had heard the old man's painful moans and labored breathing. They would be woken by one of his horrible cries or the sound of him slamming against a wall. Mr. Canis was far from fine.
That's good to hear, Hampstead said, though even from the back seat, Sabrina could spot the look of doubt on his face. I want my phone call, a little voice cried from the glove compartment. We were framed.
The sheriff banged heavily on the dashboard.
Tell it to the judge.
Soon, Sheriff Hampstead pulled his squad car into the driveway of the family's quaint two-story yellow house. It was very late, and all the lights were off. Sabrina opened her door and Elvis lumbered out, still wearing two Lilliputian-free glue traps on his giant behind. It was bitterly cold, and Sabrina hoped the two adults wouldn't blabber on. Granny could talk a person's ear off. But the sheriff just thanked them again and excused himself, claiming he had paperwork piling up back at the station. At the front door, Granny took a giant key ring out of her handbag and went to work unlocking the many locks. Once, Sabrina had believed Granny Relda was just a paranoid shut-in. But in the last 3 weeks, she had seen things that she would never have dreamed possible and now understood why the house was locked so tightly. Granny Relda knocked on the door 3 times and announced to the house that the family was home, making the last magical lock slide back and the door swing open. After cookies and some vegetable oil swabbing for Elvis, Granny Relda said,
Get cleaned up and hurry to bed. You've got school tomorrow. I kept you up too late as it is.
Actually, Granny, Sabrina replied, I think I'm coming down with something. I'd hate to go to school and get everyone sick.
Granny grinned.
Sabrina, it's been 3 weeks. If you two don't go to school tomorrow, they are going to put me in the jailhouse. Now, up to bed.
Sabrina frowned, forced a cough to make the old woman feel guilty, and then marched up the steps. Couldn't Granny see there were more important things to do than go to school? Long after Daphne had drifted into a steady, snoring sleep, Sabrina crawled out of their 4-poster bed in the room that had once been their father's. His model airplanes still hung from the ceiling, and an old catcher's mitt rested on his desk. She knelt down on her hands and knees and pulled several dusty books and a key ring out from under the bed before climbing to her feet again and creeping silently into the hallway. Sabrina was very good at creeping. In fact, she'd have said she was an expert. 1.5 years in and out of an orphanage and foster homes had taught her how to step lightly on hardwood floors and avoid creaky beams. In the past, she had used these skills to escape from one bad situation after another. In 18 months, the Sisters Grimm had run away from more than 12 foster families. Some of the families had used them as personal servants, while others expected them to be punching bags for their own obnoxious children. These days, the girls didn't want to run away. Granny Relda had given them a home. But being sneaky still had its advantages, especially when Sabrina was doing something she knew her grandmother would disapprove of.
When Sabrina reached the door at the top of the steps, she sorted through her own growing collection of keys and found the long brass skeleton key that fit it. Once it was unlocked, she took a quick look around to make sure no one was watching, and then stepped inside. The room was empty except for a full-length mirror that hung on the far wall. A single window allowed enough moonlight into the room for Sabrina to see by. She stepped up to the mirror and her reflection appeared. Her long blonde hair and blue eyes glowed a ghostly milky blue. But Sabrina wasn't here to admire herself. Instead, she did what most people would think was impossible. She walked directly into the glass and disappeared. The mirror was actually a doorway that led to an immense room Sabrina knew as the Hall of Wonders. In many ways, it reminded Sabrina of Grand Central Station in New York City, with its incredibly long, barrel-vaulted ceiling, supported by towering marble columns. There were literally thousands of arched doorways on either side of the hall. Each door was labeled with a little brass plaque that revealed what was behind it. Talking plants, giant living chess pieces, Babe, the blue ox, and thousands more impossibly interesting magical items and creatures, all collected by the Grimms for safekeeping. Granny called it the world's biggest walk-in closet. Sabrina had started to see it as her only hope. She scanned the hall and spotted a lonely figure sitting in a high-backed chair several yards away. She headed in his direction. "Mirror," the girl said to the short, squat man. "I think I found something useful." Mirror, as he was called, was a balding man with deep, angular features and thick, full lips who lived inside the mirror. His was the face that had proclaimed Snow White the fairest one of all to the Wicked Queen. When he spotted Sabrina, he set a celebrity magazine he had been reading down and got up from his chair. "I thought you'd given this up," he said. "Granny's had us pretty busy," Sabrina explained. "So let's get started." "What? No, hello? No, how are you? How's the family?" the little man complained. "Sorry, Mirror, I don't have a lot of time." "Apology accepted. So, kiddo, what's on the agenda tonight?"
"I found this thing in Burton's translation of the Arabian Nights," Sabrina said, opening one of her books and handing it to Mirror. He didn't even bother to look at the page.
"Listen, Blondie, I assure you, if we had a genie's lamp, I'd have a lot more hair on my head, and we'd all be living in Hawaii. Sweetums, don't you think that if your grandmother had access to that kind of power, your parents would have already been found?"
Sabrina frowned. She would spend the whole day researching ways to rescue her parents from their kidnappers, and every night, Mirror would shoot her ideas down one by one. "Fine," Sabrina replied, handing Mirror another book she had opened already.
"What about this?"
Mirror looked down at the book, flipped it to view its cover, and smiled.
"L. Frank Baum, huh? Follow me, little cowpoke. I think we might just have that one in stock."
The little man spun around and headed down the long hallway.
"The golden cap is one of the most interesting things the Wicked Witch ever owned. Yet most people are more fascinated by her broomstick," he continued.
"I've been reading as much as I can," Sabrina replied, doing her best to keep up with Mirror's quick pace.
"Oh, I have no doubt about that," the little man said, spinning around on the girl. "So, you know how it works?"
"Yes, I put it on and the monkeys come. They'll do whatever I want them to."
"The only downside is the monkey smell," the mirror said. "That's a stink that never quite goes away."
After a short hike, Mirror stopped at a door labeled Magical Hats and reached out his hand. Sabrina handed him her key ring.
"You're building quite a collection," he said disapprovingly. "Does your grandmother know you've been swiping her keys and making copies?"
Sabrina shook her head no.
"Well, you've got one for this door," he said.
He opened the door and went inside. As Sabrina waited in the hall, she could see him rummaging through the room. He made quite a racket moving things around, knocking over a helmet in the process, which rolled across the floor with a clatter. Soon he returned with a gold-colored hard hat, which held a can of soda on each side. Tubes ran out of the cans and dangled below the chin strap. On the front of the hat, the words Emerald City Green Sox were printed in big green letters. Mirror dusted it off and handed it to Sabrina. "This is the golden cap the Wicked Witch of the West used to summon the flying monkeys?" she said in disbelief. "The witch was a huge sports fan," Mirror replied. "The magic instructions are inside." "You've got to be kidding me," Sabrina said as she read them. "Afraid not." The girl scowled and put the hat on her head. Following the ridiculous instructions, she lifted her right leg and began the crazy spell. "Epi-peppy-khaki." Mirror turned away and snickered. "Don't laugh. I feel stupid enough," Sabrina said, lowering her leg and lifting the other. "Hillo-holo-hello." "I wish I had a camera," the little man giggled. "Zizzy-zuzzy-zick," the girl said, now standing on both feet. Suddenly, her ears filled with the sound of 100 flapping wings. Monkeys materialized out of thin air. They gathered around their summoner, grinning and beating their black wings. Sabrina understood immediately why Mirror had warned her about the monkey smell. They were a ripe bunch. She thought she might gag when one of the monkeys, wearing a beanie with a bright blue ball on top, took her hand and gave it a sloppy kiss.
"What is your bidding, master?"
it asked in a deep, unearthly voice. Sabrina hadn't gotten used to talking animals yet. They made her nervous.
"Okay, Mr. Monkey, I need you to go fetch my parents," she commanded.
The monkeys screamed and clapped their hands, as if she had just promised them bananas. Their wings started to flap and they leaped into the air. But instead of disappearing, as Sabrina expected, they zipped around the hall, flying in all directions, as if they weren't sure which way to go. The leader floated back down to the girl. He had a confused expression on his face. "What's wrong?" Sabrina asked.
"Great magic blocks our path. Your wish cannot be granted," he said.
And as quickly as he and the others had appeared, they were gone.
"Why not?"
Sabrina shouted angrily. She took the obnoxious magic hat off her head and shook it, but the monkeys did not return. Mirror gave her a sad, pitying smile, but Sabrina couldn't bear to look at it. She was exhausted and angry, and not a single step closer to finding her parents. How many more dead ends could she come up against? She forced a smile and handed the golden cap back to Mirror. The little man nodded and put it inside its room, shutting the door and locking it behind him. "Thanks anyway." She sighed as she took her key ring and silently walked away. She stepped through the portal without looking back and found herself alone again in the empty room. Crossing the floor, Sabrina suddenly stopped, turned, and looked at herself in the mirror's reflection. "Mirror?" she called out softly. A blue mist filled the glass, and the little man's squat, muscular head peered out at her.
"Want to take a look?" he asked.
Sabrina nodded. He winked.
"You know how it works."
"Mirror, mirror, near and far, show me where my parents are," the girl said.
Once again, the mirror's surface changed. As the little man's face disappeared, Sabrina's parents, Henry and Veronica Grimm, appeared instead. They were lying on a bed in the dark, fast asleep. Sabrina looked at her parents' faces and sighed. Her father had a round, warm face like her sister's, framed with blonde hair. Her mother, Veronica, was beautiful, with high cheekbones and jet-black locks. They looked vulnerable lying there, surrounded by darkness.
"I won't let another Christmas go by without you. I'll find a way to bring you home," Sabrina said as she reached out to touch them.
Her hand dipped into the magic mirror's reflective surface, and her parents' image rippled the way a pond does when a stone is thrown into it. Sabrina stared at them until they faded away.
Same time tomorrow night? Mira said as his face reappeared.
See you then, Sabrina said, wiping the tears from her cheeks and flashing Mira a hopeful smile.
The little man nodded and his face faded away. The girl tiptoed back down the hallway, but just as she reached her bedroom, she heard a painful groan coming from the room opposite. Mr. Canis was having another difficult night. Sabrina stood in the hallway listening to his painful breathing. She imagined that at any moment the door might explode and the big bad wolf would catch her up in his jaws. What would they do if the wolf beat Mr. Canis and got loose? What if the old man wasn't strong enough to keep him inside? But Mr. Canis wasn't the only ever-after she had doubts about lately. The charm of living in a community where fairy godmothers and cowardly lions were her neighbors had worn off, and Sabrina was beginning to view the ever-afters with suspicion. After all, one of them was responsible for kidnapping her parents. She had decided to keep an eye on them all until her parents were home, Mr. Canis included.
"Go to bed, child," a voice growled. "Or are you going to huff and puff and blow the door in?"
The voice startled Sabrina. It sounded like a combination of Canis and the wolf, and she quickly darted into her bedroom and closed her door tightly. Leaning against it, she realized how dumb she had been. Of course he could smell her through his bedroom door.